Everybody, sorry for the delay. House City Affairs Committee will please come to order. We'll be attempting to look at four bills today. It'll be HB 293, that's on the bear license plate. SB, Senate Bill 116, Service of Citations. House Bill 270, that will not be heard because that is a companion bill to the previous SB 116. And HB 216, Official Languages of the State. And with that, we're going to go first to House Bill 293. If the presenter for that would come forward, I would appreciate it.
Roll call, sir.
Okay, and we do a roll call. Very good. Take the roll, please.
Representative Price Hawkins.
Here.
Representative Gaddis.
Here.
Representative Hughes.
Here.
Representative Isaacson.
Here.
Representative Keller.
Here.
Representative Millett.
Excused.
Chair Lynn.
Here. Okay, we're ready for business, I believe. So let's go on to, excuse me. CS for, we have a CS that needs to be adopted at version N. Can I get a motion from somebody to adopt the CS for discussion?
I would move HB 293 version N. That's work order LS1304N for in front of us for discussion.
Okay. Without objection for discussion. And in your presentation, would you please tell us what's different in this CS we just adopted? Good morning.
Okay. Thank you. My name is Representative Peggy Wilson from District 33. And Sherry Klein, my staff for on this bill, has been working on it very closely, and so I'm going to turn it over to her, and she can do the explaining. She really understands it better than I do.
Hopefully. Good morning. For the record, I'm Sherry Klein, staff to Representative Peggy Wilson, District 33. Representative Wilson originally introduced this bill to add an option to our primary license plate. One of her constituents talked about how many compliments he used to get on his bear license plate when he was driving down south back in the 1970s and 80s. It was Alaska's bicentennial plate and was readily recognized as an Alaskan symbol of Alaska. A recent poll at carinsurance.com shows that our plain yellow license plate is one of the least favored in all of the 50 states. So we think that the bear is pretty symbolic of our entire state and would give residents an option as a primary plate. We talked to past commissioner of the Department of Public Safety, and he mentioned that at the time that the main reason the bear was adopted in 1976 was that it represents something that all of Alaska has in common. There are bears all the way from southeast up to the Arctic, in Fairbanks, in the interior, and Kodiak, so they're pretty much something that we all have in our entire state. Since the representative first started work on this bill, her focus changed slightly because another constituent asked, why are you wasting your time on an insignificant plate when you have important issues like education, gas pipeline, and state funds that you should be working on? This comment made her wonder why the legislature needs to be involved in what should be day-to-day operations of the Department of Motor Vehicles. She questioned, should legislatures really spend their time and energy drafting and carrying a bill through the legislature every time a constituent wants a specialty plate? It seems, especially in these times of shorter sessions, that there are more important state matters that should be dealt with. And then we do know that this issue seems to get brought up about every 2 years, and it is our hope that something would actually happen this session. Therefore, House Bill 293 proposes that all specialty plates would be approved within the Department of Motor Vehicles. The department will develop a standard procedure that all constituents can follow when they have a request for a specialty plate. Additionally, the department would develop a fee schedule that would ensure the cost of all new specialty plates are completely covered. And lastly, the CS in front of you includes changing current wording regarding specialty plates for firefighters and EMTs. As it is currently, it would change the wording from former to retired. So the wrap-up is what originally was just a bare license plate and now has a few added features to it. And that's really just the entire bill. Even though it's quite long, it's pretty simple.
Thank you very much. I would make the point that quite frequently we get criticized as a group and perhaps individually, you know, for offering legislation for consideration that somebody thinks is not important. Well, I'd like to point out that, you know, we have a process here, and the legislation, proposed legislation on the gas pipeline and on education and on the budget and all these other truly heavy-duty bills, they're all being considered in another committee. So we can offer all kinds of legislation on many different subjects, from the short to the long, the less complicated to the more complicated. We do that all at the same time. We do a lot of multifunction here. Nothing in the legislation on any of the bills we may hear this morning or in other committees is going to delay to any degree whatsoever whatever we do on the gas pipeline, for example, or the other, what I would call, heavy-duty subjects. So there's no concern. I just want to especially assure the general public that we do multitask down here, and we do it quite well. And we do have a sense of priority, and we do that good. And so I want to thank you for presenting this bill, and the other folks around the table for in the room for presenting the other bills we may be hearing this morning. So any questions for the sponsor, Representative Gattis?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I have constituents that have worked on and are part of the NRA plates. And the specifics are the more NRA plates sold, the more these, and this happens to be, imagine that, shooters groups. And so that they... so that they fund shooting groups. And so what I would ask is, if all of this, how does, if it all goes back to DMV and they handle it all, how would something like the NRA plates come to be as a fundraiser? Would that go just to the DMV and they would make that choice? Or if it doesn't come to us? And I guess what I'm really asking, as a fundraising standpoint, when there are plates sold and put together in the first place as fundraisers, and I realize that this plate is not a fundraiser, it's just an option, and quite frankly for looks, if you will, but what does it do to those fundraising portions? And what does it do for the future fundraisers coming forward?
Actually, none of that will change. Everything can be done the way it is. We're not changing anything that the DMV, those are in their regulations, and those won't change.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Gattis.
And I'm not sure that I understood that, and so the NRA plates, the ones that are there now, won't change. But I guess what I'm asking, if another organization wanted to come forward and have their plates for a fundraiser, does this regulation change it so that they cannot come to us for fundraising plates like the NRA plates? What does this regulation change in that regard?
I think Amy from DMV is here, and
is here.
We can let her ask those questions.
Would that be okay?
Thank you. Certainly.
Let me have Ms. Erickson come forward, please.
Good morning. For the record, Amy Erickson, Director of the Division of Motor Vehicles.
And I'd like to put on the record, I'd like to thank you for the good service on my personal bill, HB1. Thank you for all of your help on that, and all the folks over at DMV.
Thank
please
you.
Continue.
You're welcome. I think Representative Gattis has a point that these specialty plates that are tied to an appropriation would need to be handled by the legislature. So while we could take care of the specialty plates and the ordering of them and setting up the design, if you're going to dedicate it to a certain fund, I think you would have to touch it after we did.
President Gattis?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so would we touch it before you did or touch it after you did?
Through the Chair, Representative Gattis, I don't know that it would matter. If we we could set it up and then I don't actually know the answer to that. I would think it could go either way.
And Mr. Chair?
Yes, go ahead.
And I think that that is my concern, that I don't want to stop those programs, that that certainly is a funding source that they go through, and I know my office is in the process of trying to figure out how that appropriation is taking it back, and they were put together for a purpose, and I don't want to take that purpose away.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions for Ms. Eggenbauer here? President Isaacson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So this, just for everyone's gratification, edification, whichever, we had discussions outside with the sponsor and with Ms. Erickson prior to the meeting here. I was going to propose a broad amendment that would delete Section 4, but in the discussion, we were really boiling it down to the issue of now probably just deleting the words active and retired, which is replacing the word former.
And where are you on that?
Section 4, page 2, going to starting at line 18, going to page 3, line 9. So if I offered a conceptual amendment to delete the words active and retired, and that then it would restructure this, what would the effect be on the department? Ms. Erickson.
Through the chair, Representative Isaacson, I think that it could go two ways. We could either turn that into a specialty plate that anyone could apply for or choose as their plate, or you could have standards for them to qualify for it, which means we would need to set up some regulations to establish what those are.
So if the if I may.
Continue.
If the conceptual amendment then was to delete the terms active or retired and make it available for any firefighter who has served 5 years or longer, whether they are active or former, retired, whatever, then would that provide the direction that the department needs?
Through the chair, Representative Isaacson, I think it would.
Okay.
Yeah, and I'd like to have you ask you when we can. Representative Wilson.
I'll bring her back.
When, comment on that.
Yes, thank you. Thank you.
Representative Vice Chair Keller.
Yeah, thank you. My questions are related to Section 5, and this is, I was in the last round, and the sponsor, said this comes back to kind of a perennial question, and the division supported this language last time, too. I remember I voted against it, and I still have concerns. To me, and I would like you to respond to my concerns with that area. It puts the division in the position of having to choose between political issues, concepts that are important out there, and it doesn't seem right to me to put that on the administrative branch. In other words, personally, I'm proud of good Alaska plates. I loved our bear plates. I loved our Iditarod Trail. And it is nice to drive outside and, when you're outside, to have a good set of plates that we are proud of. It isn't a waste of time. It's a matter of state pride. If we get into a situation, though, where you're having to decide whether or not somebody is pro-gun, anti-gun, or whatever issue you want to pick, I really squirm at that. It seems to me like we have avoided that well in the legislature. I think it needs to be continued to be avoided. And, I'm open to you straightening me out if I am presuming things I shouldn't. But if you agree, I would be for taking that section out. So.
Through the chair, Representative Keller. It wouldn't necessarily be me, but it would be the Department of Administration.
Right. Yes, I understand it wouldn't be you. Your regulations would specify a process and whatever, but that politicized process would now be removed from the legislature. It would be the administrative branch, whether in this case, Department of Admin, yes.
Mm-hmm. Any comment on that?
I think you're right.
Okay. Any question at this point? Representative Hughes.
Just as an educational point, I understand. I had someone approach me about doing a specialty plate at one point. I didn't do it, and part of it was because of research. We understood that a lot of specialty plates have gone through the legislative process and are never actually created because there's some sort of fee to set up the molds or whatever. And so I was wondering what that cost was. And then as far as the bare plate, I noticed, I know we're not the Finance Committee, but the fiscal note is for the design, but it doesn't have anything about anything for setting up the equipment to actually create them. So could you please address that, please?
Through the Chair, Representative Hughes, the process is that the DMV works with whatever organization wants the plate, and we give them the specifications for the size of the plate and the type of file it needs to be put in, the design. It gets reviewed by the Department of Administration, the commissioner, and approved by him. And then to set it up with our vendor, it's only a $250 fee. So it's not much. And that is actually spoken to in the fiscal note, but okay. It's just the setup fee of $250.
Okay, thank you. Follow up, I didn't know there was that included the, I figured the equipment was more than 250, so thank you.
Okay, any other questions for Ms. Erickson? Okay, thank you very much. Hang around, we may have some more. Any other comment from the sponsor before I go? There's some folks online, perhaps in the room.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The discussion with Representative Isaacson, he was correct, and I'm very willing to have that put in there. And as you can see, even now, with the way things are, when it comes down to the design of the plate and how that looks and all that, that already at this point in time is the Department of Administration does handle that part of it. So we as legislators only say we want it. And then once they get it, they make all those kind of decisions about what it's going to look like and whatnot.
Okay, thank you. Representative Isaacson.
Should I make a conceptual amendment at this moment or after public testimony? That if I do it now, the public could testify.
Okay, go ahead and make your motion.
All right. So, Mr. Chair, I move conceptual amendment on pages 2, line 18 through page 3, line 9, to delete references to active or retired. And on page 3, line 6 and 9, to change the years, 10 years to 5 years.
Okay.
I'll object for purposes of explanation.
Objecting for discussion? Any discussion?
What is the, tell me again, the 10 years to 5 years is why? Through the chair, I'm sorry.
Yes, and through the chair, if we could have the sponsor address her desire to reduce it to 5.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One of the main reasons is because more people would be interested in the plates, because in Alaska, there's a lot of moving around, number one, and number two, there's a lot of people that are just volunteers that they, especially in the rural areas where they don't get paid for doing this, that it's volunteering. But without them, many lives would be lost. And so I think it's just only fair that they be able to purchase these license plates also.
And Mr. Chair, if I could continue.
Thank
you. So I did speak to two fire chiefs and one police chief regarding these plates. And The fire chiefs are wanting to give this to folks volunteer or paid, retired, active, which or former. They just don't want to have someone who has been on the job maybe 6 months get the plates. So 5 years would still be good. As to whether or not this would be a get out of jail for free type, a license to speed, the police chief said that he views these, and he instructs his departments to view these as a license of service, not license to speed. So it's a badge of service, in other words, just like veteran or NRA or something of this nature. He referenced veteran.
Well, if you see your smoke down the street and some got a license plate speeding toward it, I
assume. They may have lights. In our neck of the woods, they have blue lights on their vehicles and other things. So just to clarify, for the public's sake, this doesn't give someone with these license plates permission to speed.
That's correct.
Just because they have it.
Okay. Any other comment on this proposed amendment?
I'll remove my objection.
Okay. Any further objection? It'll be amendment number one passes.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Keller.
This is on the thought that I brought up, Representative Wilson, and I need to apologize. I did not look at the language before we came in the room. So I just want to put on the record that I'm in the embarrassing situation of having really surprised the sponsor maybe by throwing that on the table. And so I want to just apologize. But it's still something I'm very concerned about. I was wondering if you had thoughts about my comments, if you had thoughts about it.
Well, it's what the will of the committee is. However, I think that it would be good to keep it in, but if it's not the will of the committee, that wasn't the main purpose of the bill to begin with. And so, you know, we used to have a 120-day session, and we had more time to do things, and we don't have more time anymore. And we're pretty packed with things. And so I'll leave it up to the committee.
Okay. We have some folks online. I'm just going to go from the top down. We have Jerry from Ketchikan.
Mr. Chairman, this is Jerry Sigelski, and I'm the one that contacted Representative Peggy Wilson about the bear plate in 1978. I received the bear plate in the 1980s.
Would you please identify yourself, sir? I have some stuff going on here. Please identify yourself again, if you didn't before, and who you represent.
Jerry Sigelski, and I represent myself.
Thank you, sir. Go ahead.
In 1978, I received the bear license plate, and in the 1980s, I had the opportunity to drive outside, and on those occasions, I was frequently contacted by people who asked questions about Alaska and where I was from up here. As you know, there's many Alaskan towns that are dependent upon tourism, and the way I look at the Alaska bear license plate is that this is free advertising for the state of Alaska, and I think it would be an important advertisement for tourism in Alaska. When you think of Kansas, you may think of it being the first of the rectangle states. But when you look at Alaska, and especially with a bear license plate, it creates a whole different image of the last frontier. And I think that it could be a very important advertising aspect for the state. I currently have some friends that are driving down to California and then across to Arkansas, and by the time they're done, they will probably be going through at least 20 states. So that's the opportunity to put a lot of advertising for the state of Alaska out amongst the general public. And that is one of the main driving factors that I considered. I asked for asked Representative Wilson to put forth the bear license plate.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Thank you, sir. And we
Thank
have
you
we have Jeff Tucker. Are you online from Kenai?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman. This is Jeff Tucker. I'm a fire service professional in Alaska. I'm here testifying today on my own behalf. I want to testify in support of Representative Isaacson's amendment to clarify the retired and active and take that out of the legislation and lowering the time frame to 5 years. I think that's more inclusive. It gives the ability for firefighters and EMS professionals around the state to take advantage of this plate. It's to show the pride of being an active and or retired firefighter in the state, but it's really inclusive. And so takes away some of the confusion that's out there with the plate now. But I think it's a good amendment. It does allow more individuals to take advantage of that plate.
Thank you very much. Any questions for the testifier? If not, I don't have anybody else signed up that I see here. Is there anybody else online who would like to testify? I'm getting a negative nod there. Anybody in the room who would like to testify on this bill? If not, okay. We close public testimony. Bring it back to the committee for discussion. Any discussion from the committee? Questions, comments? Representative Keller.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to propose conceptual amendment number 2, which would be on page 3. Delete the entire section 5, starting at line 10 and going through line 30. And, move conceptual.
Any objection for discussion?
Object for discussion.
Okay, Representative Keller, explain.
Yeah. I want to be very clear that I understand that this may be a concern. I'm over concerned, and I don't mind if the committee decides otherwise. But I want to put my concerns on the table. I conceive of putting this section of the law being a potential lightning rod problem for the department if they have to decide between nonprofit organizations. Even if we have equal time in the regulations so that all sides can have their say, it just seems like it's something that the legislature is here to represent the state, and as was brought up, this is a positive tourism attraction. If we have an attractive plate, I believe that's true, and I just don't know if we want it politicized, not that we wouldn't politicize it, but at least we would politicize it on the basis of constituents, in this case in the House, 15,000 each that are represented. So that's my thoughts.
Any questions for the sponsor of the amendment? Representing?
I do. I just want clarification, if you will, because I don't quite understand what your intent is, I'll be honest. And what I guess I'm asking is, what you would like to have happen is the plates themselves, not necessarily the design, but for the context of what kind of plate you would want it to come to the legislature versus going directly to the DMV and having that dealt. I really don't quite understand what it is that you want.
Okay, so, thank please. You. No, I appreciate the clarification question. I think right now the way it's set up, we propose the plate specialty or the plates that with a theme like the firefighters or whatever. We approve that. The process is there, but if the organizations can go directly to the DMV, then they would be the ones laying out the design and the picture, and that there would be a process of approval. And it isn't that I don't trust the people in Department of Administration or DMV. It's just that I see it burdening them with a dangerous situation, and we all know the passion of the issues around here, and it seems like they would be endless if any 501c3 can go in and use license plates essentially as an advertisement or a statement for their particular organization. And I'm worried about that.
So in other words, you're saying that it would put the DMV in the political process rather than the legislative political process?
Precisely.
And Mr. Chair, if I can follow up. So, Representative Keller, what I'm hearing you say is that the DMV would not make that choice, but rather it would still come back to the legislature. So we would still be in that loop instead of being taken out of the loop as the bill sponsor had recommended.
That's right.
Okay, I follow.
Okay. I don't know who was first. Sure. Ladies first. Representative Hughes.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Keller, I don't know if you can answer this, or we might need Amy to answer this. Right now, if this were to stay in the way it is now, can the department say, no, that's not appropriate? And what if a 501c3 is formed around impeach Obama or impeach Governor Parnell, and they apply? Would the department have to create that, or does it have any jurisdiction to say, no, that's not appropriate? So anybody could come forward with anything, and they would be they would be obligated to create it if they paid the $250. So that's the question that I have.
Sure.
The Representative Hughes through the chair, and I will defer to the division if you like, but the way I see it, my mind went blank. I had this great point. Repeat your question.
Thank you. If we were to pass it the way it is now, would the department have any ability to say someone that came forward?
Of course, thank you. The department has broad powers to write regulations. Yes, they would be able to choose yes or no, just like we would. It'd just be a different process. It'd be established through the regulation process, and they would have to decide between a yes and no on these requests. And it seems to me like that putting that process out of our reach is a potential problem, because if I don't know how they would do it, and maybe the division would have some thoughts on that. But if they had, for example, a series of people, somebody's going to be ultimately in charge of saying yes or no. And if that person chooses to do something that prove something that is politically caustic, then it seems like the consequences to the department and division are huge. The legislature is used to making those kind of decisions all the time. So, but in answer to your question directly, yes, I believe they have broad power to say yes or no, on any given proposal.
Of course, the DMV, they don't get elected. We get elected, and we make decisions. Some people agree, some disagree, but we are elected representatives, and if we make what our constituents think a poor choice, we can get ourselves unelected. If we put some inappropriate plate, in everybody's cars. I believe Representative Isaacson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the sponsor wanting to streamline that process, but some good points have been raised. I was wondering maybe if we could have Amy come back and talk to us about how many times this would, or if this was in law right now, how many times it's been activated, let's say. How many requests does the department get for specialty license plates, and how would she direct regulation as far as discretion? Because to one person, what is caustic might be to another person the purpose for existence.
Through the chair, Representative Isaacson, at this point, the DMV doesn't get any requests for it because it's handled through the legislature. The commissioner of the Department of Administration has said with regard to this bill that he would not object to the responsibility of doing it, but I do understand, and I hear Representative Keller's point, that it would then be the commissioner's responsibility to go through the applications, and we would have to establish regulation. I couldn't speak to how we would do it, but this legislation guides us in that direction, and we would follow it.
So you get the slings and arrows rather than folks who are elected.
Elected official. Okay.
That's true, Mr. Chair.
Reverend Keller, any follow-up?
No.
Any?
So,
Reverend Isaacson.
Just to follow up then, and thank you, Amy. I would tend to agree then with the maker of this amendment. We would be imitating Congress and allowing agencies to do our work and putting them in the driver's seat rather than doing our due diligence, and so I'd have to support the amendment. Okay.
Representative Gaddis.
And I guess I'll speak to the same thing. I can understand the sponsor. I mean, I'm looking at some of these plates that somewhere, some legislator put together at some date, and I'm looking at one, breast cancer awareness, that to me doesn't seem very political at all. But zero plates have been sold, but somebody spent a lot of money and time getting it passed. Whereas I see military unit designation, 3,700 plus, support our troops, 1,100, almost 1,200. So, I mean, I see some very good attempts at this, but at the same time, I guess at the end of the day, I can see Representative Keller's point of view that, you know, it's up to us to make the right decisions and, you know, not put things out there on our plates that we don't want to travel around with. So I'll be supporting this amendment.
Okay. Any other questions? Representative Hughes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to say, too, I think that because it's more difficult to get it through the legislative process, that we might have a great increase to the department if we were to pass this, and it might be a little bit more time-consuming than we might realize because literally hundreds of organizations could all of a sudden decide to apply. So I'll be supporting the amendment.
Yeah.
As much as I appreciate the sponsors wanting to streamline, I'm all for streamlining, but in this case I have concerns. Thank you.
Who did the objection to this amendment?
I'll remove my objection.
Okay. Without any further objection, if not, amendment number 2 passes this House State Affairs Committee.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Isaacson.
I just noticed that we're going to need to make amendment number 3.
Uh-oh. Okay.
And that is on section 6.
Give me a page.
On starting on page 3 going to page 4 when it talks about specialty plate fees. And so this goes with conceptual amendment number 1.
Excuse me, that, oh, okay.
Go so ahead. It's on page 4. So
okay. I've got you. Go ahead.
Conceptual amendment would be to rework section 6 to have one fee as designated by the sponsor, if she wanted to talk to this, and that remove the words active and retired.
Okay. Is that discussing an amendment you may make, or is it an amendment?
It is, and well, I guess perhaps let's do it as a proposal and have the
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I believe that as a conceptual amendment, that bill drafting will automatically go through the bill and take off those references.
So, Mr. Chair.
Representative Isaacson.
And thank you then to the sponsor, Representative Wilson. So I was specific in the conceptual with the lines and the pages. And so I believe I need to specify this. If you had a preference, is this a $30 or a $50 plate?
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Amy says that it's up to the legislature to decide.
And Mr. Chair.
Representative Hughes.
And maybe, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Gaddis.
It's okay.
Representative Gaddis.
They confuse me with all kinds of folks.
Well.
And I'm happily to be confused with my colleague from the other side of my valley. So with that in mind, through the chair, can we have, I mean, I'm thinking it would have continuity if we have the firefighters and the military and all those folks fall in line with the same fees, then we would show that we would certainly have some of the same mindsets.
And we wouldn't show preferential.
There you go. Yeah. Couldn't have said it better. But that would have been my thinking, how we would set those fees.
Ms. Erickson?
Through the chair, Representative Geddes, I don't actually know the cost of some of those plates. I think they're actually as much as $100.
Mr. Chair?
Geddes.
Thank you. And so that leads us back to my first conversation was, are some of them fundraisers or money makers, and that separation I think needs to happen at some point, because I have, again, speaking of the NRA plates, but if there are some that are fundraisers, and it's my understanding that these are just actually the plates, not a fundraiser, that we would want to keep the fundraisers on one side of the table and the actual plates on the other side of the table, plate only. And so I, when looking at the list, I couldn't determine. I kind of thought I could determine, but I couldn't determine which ones were the fundraisers and which ones weren't. and hoping the bill sponsor can tell us what her intent was. Was it to be a fundraiser or just the actual plate?
Representative Wilson.
Just the actual plate.
So with that, I move conceptual amendment number 3 to delete references to active and retired in section 6 on page 4 and have the cost be equivalent to the cost of a veteran's license plate.
Okay. Any objection?
It's not a fundraiser.
Do you object?
I guess I was going to object because I just didn't know if it was a fundraiser plate or not, and that hasn't been made clear.
So are you objecting for discussion?
I'm going to object for discussion.
Thank you.
If we, and I believe the director of DMV is checking with her people right now to see, but it is my understanding that veterans is not a fundraiser plate.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Geddes.
I certainly would have no problem stating that it be the same as the veterans, considering that the veterans plate is not a fundraiser plate, but rather that is the flat fee for the plate, and utilize that language and that intent. Since we don't know whether it for sure is a fundraiser or not, that certainly is our intent. And I would be good. I would remove my objection as long as that intent is made clear.
Mr. Chair, I think Amy has the answer.
Ms. Erickson, which one do you want me to call on?
Ms. Erickson.
Through the chair, Representative Geddes, the non-fundraising plate is $30.
Again, please?
$30.
Okay.
So, Mr. Chair.
Representative Erickson.
If I could amend my conceptual to say, and the cost be $30.
And Mr. Chair, with that, I would remove my objection.
Well, you have to move the amendment to the amendment.
So, Mr. Chair, I move an amendment to the amendment to reflect that the specialty plate for firefighter and emergency medical service provider be $30.
Okay. Without objection. Now back to the main amendment. Any objection on the main amendment? If not, amendment number 3 passes. Okay. Any further discussion on this?
As amended.
No, there hasn't been a motion yet.
There's been no motion right now, but I'm waiting anxiously for a motion.
Mr. Chair, I move that we get this bill out of here. CSHB 293 version N, as amended with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Without objection, and I like plain language. Thank you very much. Take a short at ease while we do the paperwork.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Committee, please come back to order. Next bill we'll be considering this morning is CS for House for Senate Bill number 116, and would the sponsor please come forward for that. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Senator Dennis Egan, representing District P, which includes Juneau. I want to thank the committee for hearing the bill. It's Senate Bill 116, and what Senate Bill 116 does is correct unintended consequences of a good bill we passed in 2010. This past March, the courts implemented that law, and it stopped law enforcement from leaving a ticket under the windshield wiper of a car. I know none of us in this room ever get those. To keep enforcing local laws, many municipalities went to civil violations for just a minor offense, and that has its own problems. It wasn't available to state law enforcement at all. The bill simply lets law enforcement go back to where it was this time last year. A parking ticket can go under your windshield wiper, and the community service officers and police will be able to write a citation without having to do it in person.
And
thank you, Mr. Chair.
What is the situation today? If somebody sends and gets a parking ticket. How's it delivered today?
They have to deliver it in person.
In person.
So if you...
While they're doing that, of course...
If you're parking in a loading zone, say you're parking in a loading zone, the police would have to stay there and issue the violation in person.
Meanwhile, an assault is going on someplace, and they're waiting
for
a parking ticket.
Correct.
Mm.
And Jesse Keel on my staff
Good morning, sir. Is
able to provide more information.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Jesse Keel, staff to Senator Egan. Because of the implication that the senator just discussed in answering your question, many municipalities implemented a sort of a workaround. They took their minor offenses out of the realm of the lowest possible level of criminal offense, and they made them civil violations. That allowed them to leave the ticket under the wiper of your car, but it has, as the senator said, some significant downsides. First of which is, if a citizen wants to fight a ticket, if they believe it's an unjust ticket, they don't get to see a judge or a magistrate. Instead, you got to go to City Hall to fight City Hall. And many Alaskans are concerned about the fairness of that civil violation process. that civil violation process is also much more costly for municipalities and more difficult for them to enforce when someone neither fights a ticket nor pays it, when you get the occasional, and they're rare, but the occasional scofflaw who just throws it away. And, of course, as the senator noted, the civil violation route is not available to state law enforcement at all. So the state troopers don't write a lot of parking tickets, but they write several every year at the Palmer State Fair when people block access lanes or driveways or fire zones. And that becomes a very difficult thing under the law as it reads today because the legislature has never delegated to the Department of Public Safety any authority to make offenses civil violations, and probably appropriately so. Senate Bill 116 would fix that problem and allow a trooper to leave that ticket under the windshield wiper.
What happens, out of curiosity, if someone puts a ticket under the windshield wiper and the wind comes along and blows it off and the owner of the car comes back and doesn't see a ticket?
Mr. Chairman, in that case, under Senate Bill 116, that ticket would go into what's called a default process.
Default?
Okay. Yes. So the time to contest the ticket is passed. The ticket is not contested, neither is it paid. If that happens, the clerk of court in most municipalities, the state court clerk would send a default letter to the registered owner of the vehicle. It would say, you haven't paid this ticket, you haven't contested it, you have 15 days, I believe it's 15 days. You have a certain limited time to come in and contest it now, otherwise we'll ding it out of your PFD. I don't think the letter says ding.
Any questions for the sponsor here? Okay. I have just say right there, I think these folks are right there online. We have Scott Bloom from Kenai. Are you online, sir?
Yes. Thank you, Chairman Lynn, Vice Chair Keller. My name is Scott Bloom. I'm the city attorney for the city of Kenai. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. With me is our police chief, Gus Sandall, and he's available to answer any questions if you have any. I ask that you support Senate Bill 116, sponsored by Senator Egan, and the House companion bill sponsored by Representative Olson. The issues addressed by the bill are important to the city of Kenai for three main reasons. The first is public safety. On peak days in July, the city commonly has 10 to 12,000 visitors. And our busiest day last year, we estimate we had 15,000 visitors to our community. Our local streets, including residential streets and parking areas, are inundated. As word gets out that the city can't issue parking citations, people tend to ignore restrictions, blocking driveways, fire lanes, and emergency access. Being able to enforce parking regulations without requiring personal service would alleviate a large portion of this problem. The second reason that I ask that you support this bill is because of the strain it causes on our municipal resources. Enforcing parking as it currently exists under the law strains our municipal resources greatly. Without the ability to leave parking tickets, our limited police force must either try and track down drivers to personally serve them, boot the vehicles, or tow them. This takes time and manpower. In 2013, during the month of July, the city issued approximately 106 citations. In 2014, census law took effect or was enforced, we issued only 12. As a relatively small municipality, it is difficult at best for us to set up an alternative administrative system to issue citations. Unlike Anchorage or Fairbanks with the economics to support a separate parking authority, this is not a practical solution for the city of Kenai. The third reason that I ask you to support Senate Bill 116 is because I believe it will reduce the cost to both the city and public related to citations. If the city must provide an administrative process, it will cost the city time and money, which will be passed on to the public through increased citation amounts. Further, the alternatives of immobilizing vehicles or towing them is exponentially more expensive and burdensome on all parties. Thank you for your time today, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Okay, any questions? Okay. Mr. Gus Sandahl, are you available, sir?
Chairman Lynn, thank you. I just defer to what Attorney Scott Bloom presented.
Any questions for either Scott Bloom or Gus Sandahl? Senator, it sounds very much like common sense to me, which sometimes isn't so common, as you know.
Well, we tried to do a common sense thing, in Mr. Chair, in 2010, yeah. And it had a little problem, so we're trying to fix the common sense solution.
Well, common sense, we had in 2010. It's common sense to try to fix previous common sense.
Right.
Okay. Any questions for the sponsor? Yeah. Is anybody else online? Again, a negative nod over there.
Chair, for hearing.
I beg your pardon?
For hearing the bill.
Thank you. We haven't done it yet. We're getting close. Anybody? Anybody in the audience would like to testify? If not, I'll close public testimony. Bring it to the committee for discussion and/or motion.
I have a motion.
Mr. Vice Chair.
Yeah, I move CSSB 116 State Affairs LS 0826 Oscar out of committee, yes, with attached fiscal notes and individual recommendations.
Okay. Without objection, the bill passes. Thank you very much for bringing this bill forward. And I'll be more careful when I park now. The House State Affairs Committee will please come back to order. Next on our agenda to consider is House Bill number 216. Prime sponsors are Representatives Price, Tompkins, Millett, Edmund, Nguyen, Heron, and other sponsors, Guerra and Guttenberg. And please introduce yourself and for the record and present your bill. And then if you have any amendments, after you do it, that'd be the time to make to propose an amendment if you choose.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Jonathan Price Tompkins. I'm one of five prime sponsors of House Bill 216, along with Representative Millett, who sadly can't be with us today, Representative Nagyak, who will be testifying later this morning, and Representatives Edgeman and Heron. And I'd like to thank the committee for hearing this bill. And House Bill 216 basically acknowledges Alaska Native languages as Alaska's languages. And the bill amends a part of statute that was created with a 1998 voter initiative that I think many of us are probably familiar with. It was the U.S. English Voter Initiative. And the U.S. English Voter Initiative did two things, basically. The first thing is, in a ceremonial sense, it created English as the official language of Alaska. And then in a legal and binding sense, it stated in statute that English had to be used for government functions, that English was, you know, the language to be used by the state of Alaska and state of Alaska government. And that second sense has been litigated, and it's still, some of it's still in the books today. And this bill does not touch that at all. It just relates to the first part of the statute that was created by that voter initiative, which created sort of a ceremonial official language of Alaska, that language being English. And this bill tries to make that more inclusive and acknowledge the Alaska Native languages that, of course, have been in Alaska since long before my ancestors were around. And this is a bill that is truly a grassroots bill. There, I would imagine, hundreds of people around Alaska listening to this hearing right now. And when this was heard in Community and Regional Affairs a couple of weeks ago, it was probably the two most inspirational hours of my admittedly short legislative career. And that there are people who are dedicating their lives trying to stop these languages from going extinct. And sadly, these languages are going extinct. In 2008, for instance, the Eyak language, the last fluent speaker, passed away, Chief Marie Smith Jones. And there are a number of other languages with literally just a handful of fluent speakers left alive. But people are dedicating their lives to try to learn these languages, to try to stop these languages from lapsing into extinction, to try to revitalize them. Just before the hearing, a woman who's in this room right now pulled me aside, and she actually moved to Juneau from the Yukon Territory to be able to learn Tlingit and take Tlingit classes at the University of Alaska Southeast. I mean, she upped and moved her life, and that's very representative of what hundreds of people in Alaska are doing to try to turn the tide of language loss. And so this bill acknowledges those people's efforts. It acknowledges these languages, Alaska's languages, and be happy to take any questions. But before that, I believe there's an amendment in the committee that Representative Keller has.
Okay. One question before you do the amendment. You listed a whole number of languages. I didn't count them. But are there any, does this include every current native language, Alaska native language?
The short answer is no. All the languages are included. We got this list working with University of Alaska Fairbanks and the linguists up at UAF, and this is the inclusive language of all Alaska Native languages.
Today? Today?
To date, yeah.
Okay, thank you. Before, do you have an amendment you'd like to offer? You would offer?
Mr. Chair, Representative Thompson, Christ Thompson has asked me to make the amendment on his behalf.
Representative Keller.
I move amendment U is labeled up in the upper right-hand corner as U1. We'll call it amendment number one.
Okay, amendment
and
number
I'll object for discussion.
Object for
purposes.
Discussion, okay. Representative Christ Tompkins.
And this amendment aims to make the intent of this bill as clear as possible. And attorneys from legislative legal as well as the Department of Law trying to get sort of a diversity of opinions and perspectives will speak later today, but we want to just make it crystal clear that this bill and is not amending the part of statute that relates to day-to-day government functions. It won't force government materials to be printed in 20 languages. It doesn't affect any of that. And so this amendment tries to make that very clear, and it's completely in line with the legal perspective you'll get later today, as well as the zero fiscal note that's included in
the
bill.
Very good. Any objection to the amendment?
I object for
you object for discussion?
Yeah. We need to hear from legal.
Sure. Absolutely.
Okay. Anybody who alleged legal online? I just got the list of potential testifiers here. So looks like Hillary Martin. Are you online?
Yeah, this is Hillary Martin with Legislative Legal Services.
Okay. Did you hear the previous discussion, the proposed amendment?
Yes.
Okay. And I'd like to point out also before you start that our committee person, Representative Millett, is online. Okay.
Now, I am here.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee and absentia here. Ms. Martin, please introduce yourself and make your comments on this proposed amendment.
This Hillary Martin with Legislative Legal Services. The amendment is legislative intent. It's basically saying that the intent is that this is symbolic. It's not meant to require the government provide services in these languages. If you have any specific questions, I can answer them. I don't have anything specific to testify about.
Thank you very much, Representative Keller.
Thank you for testifying. I just wondered the whole concept of taking a a law and calling it symbolic, you know, if that is a new precedence or, I mean, if that, it just seems self-contradictory. And I want to be, I was wondering if you'd respond to that. The law exists, and I think the sponsor indicated that there had been litigation, and this had been, there's a lot of case law behind this, but then to take a law that has been litigated and there is case law and then to call it symbolic, it just doesn't seem like that's consistent with our standards. If you'd respond, I'd appreciate it.
Yeah, through the chair, the amendment is actually, it's in intent language, it's in uncodified law, but as far as I know, I'm not sure that we've done this elsewhere, calling something symbolic, but it is uncodified law. It's not going in the statutes itself. There has been a Supreme Court case about the official language statutes. I could certainly talk about that if the committee is interested. But as far as the amendment, I think that the fact that talking about it being symbolic because it's intent language and it's in uncodified law, it lessens the kind of the impact since it's not going directly in the statute.
A follow-up then, what would be the ramifications of all these language being the official languages? Does the term official language have any ramification beyond symbolic? That's the question I'm asking you.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Keller, the statute doesn't define official language, aside from declaring what the official language is. The Supreme Court has said that part of the statute, the official language statute, is unconstitutional. So the right now, the statute says English language has to be used in the preparation of all official public documents and records. But the Supreme Court has said that means it has to be done in English. That does not prevent using another language. And that statute is not being amended in this bill. So beyond that, it's not entirely clear what the effect is of declaring something is an official language. There's just there's nothing else really that forces the use of the other languages that I'm aware of.
Okay. And if I might break in, I'd like to point out Resident Hughes has been excused. She has been in another part of the Capitol building here, so she is excused. And also Representative Millett is online, and we'll give her an opportunity to testify here. Any questions for legal while we're here?
Well, no. This.
Are you?
Yes.
This is not a question for legal, so I'll hold it.
Okay. We're going to represent Isaacson and then Representative Millett.
Thank you. So, Hillary, thank you for being online with us. You mentioned a couple things. Uncodified law, what is the effect of uncodified law in an adjudicatory hearing, a legal proceeding?
Through the chair, in this situation, it's legislative intent. So there are certain circumstances where a court will look to the intent of the legislature to interpret a statute. You know, it doesn't, uncodified law does not go in the statute books. It's not part of the, you know, the statute itself. But if the court believes that a statute is ambiguous, they can look to the intent language to try and help them determine what the statute, how it should be interpreted.
So follow-up.
Follow-up, Representative Isaacson.
What would be the effect on future legislatures then or on the general public looking at statutes if they see that this it has been passed but they don't see the intent? Would it have a further effect on your interpretation of and the court's interpretation of 4412.320 where it currently is multilingual official documents are not prohibited? But now, wouldn't it necessitate the unintended consequence of it being mandated?
Through the chair, Representative Isaacson, that 320 is not being amended in the bill. So the statute will still read, the English language shall be used in the preparation of all official public documents and records. It's not, I don't believe that it would mandate the use of all of the official languages to prepare documents and records. The court case just right now the government could prepare them in other languages if they chose to, but they're not required to. I don't think that would that this bill would change that circumstance.
So, Ms.
Follow up.
Thank you. Actually, for the sponsor for Department of Law, do you have someone from the Department of Law?
Yeah,
Reverend Grice Tompkins.
Representative Isaacson, through the chair. Libby from the Department of Law is in the audience.
If we could ask her some of these questions, because that would be on the prosecuting or the defending side. And I appreciate Ledge Legal and Hillary's comments, but we also need to get
Since we have another sponsor of the bill on the line, let me go to her.
Okay.
Stay right there. And she may have something to add to this also, and you may respond to that. Representative Millett, you online still?
I am. Thank you, Chair Ledge.
Thank you. Introduce yourself and welcome back to the committee vicariously, I guess.
For the record, my name is not District 24 here in Anchorage. I co sponsored this bill because it's incredibly personal to me.
Just a minute. We're getting some technical difficulty here. Eddie. Okay, let's see if we can hear you now.
Okay, for the record, my name is Sharice Nellett. I represent House District 24 here in Anchorage, and I am a prime co-sponsor of this bill. This bill is very personal to me. I'm a quarter Inupiaq and grew up not knowing my language. My grandmother was born in White Mountain, and when she was very young, was taken to Oregon and told not to speak her native language and taught English. English was her second language, and Inupiaq was her first language. When she came back from Chumala in Oregon years later, she did not pass on the language to my mother, and in essence did not pass on the language to my generation, and so I have lost that native language opportunity to learn. What I would like to say about this bill is it is symbolic, and it does not at all require any change to statute, and it does not have any legal standing. We made sure that both of those were in the bill, and by me testifying and the intent of this is not to change any statute, to make sure that we still have English as our first and only language in Alaska. That's already in statute. But what I would like to say about this bill is when you think about the youth, the native youth of Alaska, and what they're dealing with on a daily basis, we are number one in domestic violence. We are number one in suicide. This bill is an attempt to create an environment for Native youth to be prideful of their history and where they came from and who they came from, and that they're indigenous to this land. Their ancestors were here from time immemorial, and give them an opportunity to grow, to have pride. I think the self-determination that Natives have had since the beginning of time has been lost on our youth, and I think going back to the basics of learning your language, learning the storytelling, learning what your elders have to say has been lost a little, and I'm hoping with this bill we'll re-engage the youth to understand where they came from, who they are, and have pride in themselves. And we have amazing Native youth that are coming up, and I think this bill is an opportunity for them to feel like they belong in Alaska, that they're not the outsiders. They're actually the people that we should be learning from. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I would hope that you would take that to heart, that this is a symbolic bill at most. And, as Jonathan Christ Tompkins said, any amendment that you feel necessary to make sure the legality of this does not
end up in litigation in any way. I'll point out that we do print ballots in Yupik and other languages for Indigenous people through Department of Elections if they choose that ballot. But this in no way would require 20 different ballots in 20 different languages. It's, again, an attempt at bringing pride back to the Alaska Native of our land and giving them an opportunity to embrace their heritage and their Indigenous language.
Do you have any objection to the amendment that Representative Christ Tompkins offered?
No, I don't.
Okay, Department of Law, please introduce yourself. And
good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Libby Bacalar. I'm an assistant, assistant attorney general. I'm here at the request of the sponsor, Representative Christ Tompkins, to answer any questions the committee may have on behalf of the Department of Law.
Any questions? Did somebody have one? Representative Isaacson.
I have several, if I may.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you, Libby, for being here. So, and I just as background in this, I appreciate the intent of this. However, as an individual who, as a mayor, supported the several years ago, there was a bill that successfully passed that actually enabled us to preserve Native languages, which has done incredible strides getting our languages preserved. But this bill goes a little bit further, and it opens up a door where I believe an unintended consequence, and I've spoken with the sponsor, is going to happen, because as Representative Keller's pointed out and Hillary's memorandums have pointed out, this is something that has already been through the courts and has a huge history. And so from a Department of Law standpoint, the uncodified law, what is it, if I can ask some of the same questions I asked of Hillary, what is its effect on legal proceedings?
Representative Isaacson, through the chair, I essentially agree with what Ms. Martin said. It's viewed in this case as legislative intent. The court would, in interpreting the statute, look first to the Constitution, then to the statute, and then to obviously any regulations or legislative intent language to determine what the legislature's policy intent was in passing the bill. I don't think it would have any actual legal impact. It would weigh in favor of, it would weigh in the court's determination in a disputed issue over the statute.
Thank you. So then you heard how I expressed it before as well. The unintended consequence of somebody not seeing the intent language in statute, either whether it's Department of Law trying to interpret the statute, we have huge history of intent language not appearing in statute that then lends to some confusion and some unfortunate use of statutes. And so is there the ability then of a future legislature or future Department of Law not seeing the intent in statute, then saying, well, we better align this section with section 4412320 and mandate that all official documents include all these languages?
Representative Isaacson, through the chair, I think that would be a separate bill entirely. This bill standing alone, in my view, even without the intent language, does not impose any additional requirements on the government to produce documents in the listed languages. The phrase official language doesn't appear anywhere else in the Alaska statutes. The bill doesn't change the requirements of the other parts of the official language initiative that expressly provide for government documents and publications in English. The Kritz case that Ms. Martin mentioned held that a statute that's reduced to a statement that English is the official language of the state could not be given legal effect because it would only be a statement of policy. Based on that, the amendment to the statute that adds all these languages is really, as the sponsor mentioned, the sponsors both mentioned, a policy statement without legal impact. So even regardless of intent language, I think the statute standing alone doesn't impose any additional obligations on the state to produce government documents in these listed languages.
All right, thank you.
Let me, if this amendment passes as written, would that do any harm whatsoever to the underlying legislation, HB 216? Would it?
Oh, Representative, Mr. Chairman, can you just clarify that question for me? What do you mean by harm? And
well, would it affect the purpose of the bill, I guess? I don't know how else to say it.
The policy amendment that yeah. says legislative intent. Mr. Chairman, I don't think it would affect the bill itself. The statutory language is clear. Right. I think it's the purpose of the amendment is just to reiterate what is already true in the statute and in the Constitution as interpreted by the Supreme Court, that it is largely symbolic.
Thank you very much. Representative Keller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can I ask a question on the bill itself to the Department
yes,
of Law?
Yes.
Libby, thanks for coming.
She'll be here, of course, when we get to the bill itself.
Okay, if you would rather wait, I don't mind.
Well, she's here now. Okay. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just wondering if the legal definition, I guess you would say, how it would be looked at, what an official language is affected by the bill itself. It's been mentioned that we have the Supreme Court case law and whatever, but do we not, I always try really hard to understand the language of our bills, and it just seems like that to say this is that we're doing this, but it doesn't really count, you know, I'm just having a hard time figuring it out. So my question is, if the bill passes, amended or not, have we changed, what have we changed as far as what official language means in the context of law?
Representative Keller, I don't believe we have changed anything in terms of what that phrase means, because that phrase is not actually defined anywhere in the statutes.
Follow up. Is that term not used in other statutes? And will it not be, looked at in law or in court cases maybe in the future, you know, here as long along with the other places it might be used?
Representative Keller, I don't believe it is used anywhere else in the statute.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Please hang around at some point. Representative Niniak, you're not on the list, but I would invite you to make whatever comments you'd like to make.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, permission to speak in the language that I was born with.
Okay, somebody translate it after you say it.
I'm going to do it.
Okay.
Una pit kuriya kuk. Inyugunun te mga kanga. Kasi kaktod. Ilimin nun. At wachuli pagmapak. Aglan, ilukapta, mani nunaptigin at pikpahigput, tam na ukasakput. Una pitkoreksun, anlang ako nangit ka, at aruak pitkorek, ilang akupak atuktakput. Alas kami. Malakakrat inupayanun, tamna pitkureak ilisimat kubuluwe inuit te mga kamunga alanik kausikaktut inyulat nunakip tinimani umna pitkureak ilisigini ituak ikayutang niyaktuk kitunakaptin nun, kasuitsuan nun, ako kirak, tusahit po rin yung anaganak to at timimining nun, kasuitsudik, ukasing kanawangit, kasuitsudik. Ako kaya nga kinahulunga, isak to ami aglan putto khirunga te putto khirunga tamna ummotim nin qaruaq uqausak put temungaulan inu kugalohlo. I came here in anger when I came to testify on this bill. But I since have realized it's not anger, it's passion to keep our language alive. I just want to tell you how important this is because close as 1969, we were second-class people. I remember my cousin and I were walking down the street in Fairbanks, Alaska at night, just walking along, and there's police everywhere. And two big guys came in and hit my cousin and I, hit us a few times, and we're on the ground, nothing happened. And you say this bill is symbolic. Well, what do you call the present language, the bill? It says in a legal opinion that it's symbolic that the bill that we're using now. And so, this bill is not symbolic. It's a recognition that we were here, our people of Alaska, that spoke, that have been here since time immemorial, had other languages. You know why Border Island is called Border Island? Because that's where that's the area where the Indians, the Gwich'in, and the Inupiaq, the Eskimos, traded, and that certain piece of land was, it was understood that nothing happened bad in that area, in that place, because it was a place to trade. Even though we had differences, we had times that we needed each other. Today we need each other. The people who are not native. Everybody came in, and we had consequences that were incidental. We had consequences that happened. The first people who came here had brought in diseases that were not native to the indigenous people, and it killed off a lot of people. So there's unintended consequences for everything. And I don't think this bill will change anything today in this state. It's just a recognition that people since time immemorial has been speaking their language, and they're trying to keep it alive. Just like you. You want English to be alive. And so we have the same passion you do in protecting what you know. That's human nature. And so I just want to make a point. This is not symbolic. This bill is not symbolic. It's a recognition that there were people here before the Russians came. Thank you.
Go anywhere.
Yeah. Representative Keller and then Isaacson.
Thank you, Representative Nagyak. Does Koktovic, that is a translation.
Koktovic.
Yeah,
Koktovic means a place to sane.
Yeah.
But there's consequences, the unintended consequences, when the The Dominant Society came, they saw this, and they called it, oh, they watched the bartering of the tribes, you know, the Inupiaq and the Indian tribes, and they were bartering, so they called it Barter Island. That's the English name, Barter Island.
And that's I spent quite a bit, if I could.
Yes.
I spent quite a bit of time up on the North Slope, and Inupiaq is a language that I wish I could say that I know a lot of the words that you use, but I don't. When you talk, I get lost real quick. I just want to ask you why this vehicle was used, I mean, to bring this forward, because to honor and to establish, I agree with you wholeheartedly that the issue here is not symbolic. Okay, the issue here is that we want to preserve languages that are in danger of extinction, which in turn protects the cultures that have them. For example, one of the things I got to appreciate is how many words there are for snow in Inupiaq, and how puny English is alongside of your language, you know, because you can describe the different kinds of snow in words quickly, and you know, it's over our heads. We do not want that to go to extinct. My question to you is, why are we using this format when there's so many other things that we could do? Like, we could have a day, you know, that honors the native languages in the state of Alaska. And I think that, you know, I'll be a co-sponsor. You know, that's a great idea. That's a good approach. And I just checked.
No, I'll be a co-sponsor, too.
I just checked the wonders of the iPad here, and I still am choking on the fact that we are going in and taking a law and using the words official language and defining it this way when the word official is used in Alaska statutes 650 some times. Sure, not official language, but the word official is, and the word language is used many, many other times. It's a way to make a statement, but my question to you is, why don't we, shall we, make a Alaska Native Language Day? And provide curriculum and funds, you know, to make sure that these languages don't get lost. Very important. I'm passionately with you, and I appreciate your language, you know, but I'm really struggling with this format, so I wonder if you had a response.
You're talking about the format of the amendment or the format of the bill?
The format of the bill going in, and you know, because it just seems like it, for example, the voter bill that was passed that used the word official language, that politicized it to a point that it seems like it might work against us. It actually might, you know, deepen the wedge that we don't need, you know. I mean, that's crazy. You know, and I struggle with the vehicle that we're bringing it forward with. So,
well, the same format as the English language bill that we still use today is. That's how it got in. I mean, we're talking about something that, you know, we understand that's the same thing that was used to present the English language bill. The same format. That's because it's the law in this state. We have to follow the law. So we're using the format that was given to us by the state. And that's the format that was used to make English the official language. And so when you talk symbolic, look at that. I mean, it's a recognition, just like that the English language was a recognition. It's a recognition that the language is used officially in a lot of things. We use it. I remember when, you know, we were growing up, we were told not to speak the language, but those of us who had a hard time listening kept it up. You know, we had teachers that were in that were from Texas and other places, warm. I mean, I'm sorry, I'm not picking on them, but the fact is, a lot of them were Texan. And they came up there, and we had recess. You know, we couldn't speak the language in our school, but unbeknownst to them, because they didn't go outside during recess because it was cold, and so they stayed inside. So they didn't know that we were speaking our language, but if somebody was peeking out the door, and we all started speaking English. And so we kept that alive. So at home, you know, when we came home after school, we still spoke the language. That's why we were the last generation to fully understand, to read it, to write it, and to everything. We were the last generation. And my children are struggling. They were... Because when a bunch of people, native people, come together in their language, they're always laughing. And then they cry. And they laugh again. Because that's what language is. It's emotional. So, and I just want to make you understand, it's the same thing, the same format that was used for this, the bill that we're talking about.
Reverend Keller.
Yeah, thank you very much. And I just wanted to say that I share your passion, and I just wanted you to know that I struggle with the vehicle, but I share your passion, and I'm willingly join you in efforts to honor and to preserve the things that are precious to Native Alaskans in the area of language. By the way, when I was up there, I learned real quick that I was a Tunnock.
That's right.
Yeah, that's right.
And I'm everyone.
Yeah.
And
would you please translate that for me?
The white guy.
And a woman. I'm everyone.
Okay. Reverend Gant, now we're getting a little far afield here because we have an amendment on the table.
I'm sorry.
To do or not to do. So, Reverend Gantis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is somewhat far afield, but it goes hand in hand what we heard Representative Nagyok speak of. And so firstly, speaking to the bill sponsor, when we talk about the symbolic and recognize and honor the languages of Alaska that have either are still with us or that are gone, I can recognize that. But as I hear Representative Nagyok talk about keeping the language, keeping it going, the bill speaks nothing to that particular part. And I can't help reflect on a different language where my parents came in. And as he spoke of Russia, I couldn't help but that's where my parents came from, Russia. And, of course, we don't know that language because the first thing that they did is learn the English language to assimilate here into the United States because that's what the United States speaks and reads is the English language. So I can understand both sides, but as in speaking to the bill sponsor, it being symbolic, it doesn't do anything to teach it, to keep it alive. Certainly it doesn't hinder that. And as Representative Keller spoke of, something more, something to keep it alive, something to utilize it in education or something, is certainly a different vehicle. So I guess I'm trying to get back to the actual bill itself. And even though I can appreciate what Representative Nagyok spoke of, at this point the bill does not speak to keeping the languages alive or doing anything to keep it alive, just as a symbolic nature. And so there's a little bit of separation there.
It's almost like two separate bills, it seemed like to me.
It would seem like to me. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And then we have approximately 10 minutes left, and I have a couple of folks at least who'd like to make some comments. So I'd like to progress as far as we can on this, and either move it or not move it, but we need to move forward here. Representative Isaacson.
Thank you, Mr.
Are we speaking to the amendment or the underlying bill?
Mr. Chair, we've been overlapping in several ways, and so...
I know, and that's my fault to let you do it.
I could remove my objection to the amendment, but I want to ask my esteemed colleague about it. I do have some questions for him.
Go ahead.
Thank you. And Benny, you and I are brothers heart and soul. Mm-hmm. You're my older brother.
Yeah, correct.
And... on this, though, I have some heartburn. I supported Donnie Olson's request and wrote in favor of it and testified in favor of it that passed the legislature to actually help preserve language. And you know that I'm a linguist, and I have a Bachelor's of Arts in Linguistics, and I was published with a PhD candidate in a peer-reviewed article in Lillooet in a Salish Indian dialect, and there, ironically, they have 28 different ways of saying to fall, if I remember right. And I grew up in a family where my grandfather, on my dad's side, did not allow his children to speak Norwegian, and because they were in America. And so even though some of the kids around me could speak Norwegian, I couldn't even sneeze in it. I can say kusmier norsk now, but even the Norwegians don't understand my accent. But I've studied formally and informally approximately 10, 12 languages. I was here as a Russian linguist. I was in a Spanish singing group. I know other languages, won't go into, so I understand when you say language is emotional, language is of the heart. And to preserve language, we have to do many more things than just declare it's official. We have never declared any language in America official. Not Cherokee, not English, not German, not Spanish. And yet we've accepted English as the language of trade, and now Spanish is coming on board. Teddy Roosevelt, when he was president back in 1906 or 07, he warned us that we could become basically a boarding house of polyglot residents, if I remember right, where we wouldn't be able to communicate at all. The unintended burden of making something official, where we are trying to establish culture and pride, where we're trying to be one people, recognizing the multifaceted diversity of our culture. The intent of this amendment, it says, is symbolic. And I know that you're saying it is a recognition, a symbolic recognition. But is this vehicle really going to accomplish what you and the sponsor are trying to do, and how you eloquently demonstrated it for the reasons that have been said before? Barter Island, did they have one language of trade?
Pardon?
On Barter Island, when Witchin and Inupiaq got together, did they have a language of trade?
I'm sure they did, but I don't think it was passed on.
Yeah, I don't know either. Many cultures throughout history that have had multilingual, cultures come together for trade have adopted a trade language. Rome adopted Greek as a trade language, for example. I'm just asking you because you said this is not symbolic. Would you be speaking against the amendment? Because it does say 20 languages as official languages of the state is symbolic. So I'm trying to get my head around this, and I'll let you answer.
It's a recognition. It's not symbolic. It's a recognition. And by the way, we're the native people here. We're not from another country. We were here before.
Well, eventually.
Since time immemorial. Don't parse words with me, please. I mean, we were here for tens of thousands of years, and maybe. So that, so we've been here a very long time. And we've been in this country before anybody else came in. And so I think, we don't need to parse words. We need to recognize that we were here for a very long time when the foreign and Russians came. Because that's who, landed in this country and in Alaska and made it their own. But we were here.
Respectfully, a follow-up.
Let's cut it short because we're probably going to have to hold it over. We just only got about 5 minutes to go.
We do need to hear from them. But
yeah, I need a couple of these people.
Because this is important, Mr. Chair, because, Benny, when we're talking law, we have to parse words. That is the purpose of law. And with this bill, we're establishing an official language by law. So we do have to parse words. And it's very important to understand intent then, and this is trying to establish intent. It's very important then to make sure that the intent follows the law so that we don't have compounding results from a law where a future legislature might be encumbered with having to provide everything in 20 different languages, for example, even EAC, which no longer has a fluent speaker in it. So, as the sponsor mentioned, so it's very important for me to understand what we will do with this and what will happen with this after we've done it, because the next step is progression. Somebody will do something more, and someone will try to infer an intent that is not in this intent, because intent doesn't follow the codified law. It won't be in the books. So help me understand.
Let me remind you, we're using the same format that was used to place English as a recognized language. We're using the same format.
Okay. Reverend Christ, Tom, and then I'm going to cut it off and take some kind of action on this amendment.
Sure.
Reverend Miller, that's you?
Yes.
Yeah, can I make a comment?
Go ahead.
This bill is no different than taking the official dog to Malamute. We do a lot of things. We do a lot of symbolic pleasure. This has no legacy whatsoever other than to encourage our youth, encourage people that used to speak our indigenous language to speak it again, except it's to bring pride back to the native people. We do a lot of official this, official that. We're talking about license plates. This does not hold any force of law at all whatsoever. Don't understand the pushback from recognizing the people that the first people that were here in Alaska before we became part of the United States. I don't understand the pushback. You can have an official dog, an official flower, you can have an official this, and they don't mean anything. I mean, they're there. We didn't have this kind of dialogue when we passed those people legislation, but we're talking about giving pride back to indigenous people, giving pride back to our youth. It doesn't mean it's going to make them learn it. It doesn't make anything other than it's a start. It is a beginning of something, a beginning of a movement that puts pride back in our Alaska Native heritage that we have lost, that we have been beaten down by other people so we wouldn't feel that pride. I have story after story after story from elders from my grandmother's generation where they were beat when they spoke their language. This is righting a wrong that was done years ago. And so I get a little offended when people start going on and on about, we're not teaching them, we're not telling them. This is the beginning of something. I'm very passionate about this bill. I'm so upset that I don't know Inupiaq, that I don't know the language. I wish that my grandma wasn't beaten and told not to speak her native language. I wish my mother wasn't ashamed of being Native and not wanting to learn her indigenous language. I want to right that wrong. I want a start. I want a beginning, Mr. Chairman. And this is what this bill is about. It's about that. It's about a start of giving pride back to Alaska Natives. It means a lot to a lot of people. And I guess maybe until you walk in some of those shoes, you might not understand it. But I just want to point out that we do a lot of things in the legislature that doesn't get as much debate as what we're trying to do. We didn't have this much debate when we were talking about the official dog as a Malamute. So, Mr. Chairman, I would just ask people to look in their hearts. This is not, we're not doing anything with force of law. This doesn't change any of our statutes. English is our language. But what we're doing is we're doing a symbolic gesture to the pass on to the youth of our state that are Native, partial Native, to say, hey, You should have pride. You should learn your native language. You should know where you came from. You should know your history. You should know what has happened and go forward and be proud.
Yeah. Thank you for your comments. I don't see really pushback here. I see a committee process where we try. It's very, very important. But whatever we do with it, the amendment or the bill, it's a very, very important bill, and it deserves committee discussion. That's not pushback. It's just the bill is so important. Wherever you are on it, it's so important, and we need to thoroughly vet it and learn what we can before we pass it out or don't pass it or whatever we do with it. We need to take the time to thoroughly vet the bill because it is important. If it wasn't important, maybe we wouldn't spend this much time. If you could make it, I'd like to act on the amendment now. I have, before you speak, let me ask, I have two folks in the audience who would like to have spoken to Libby Bacalar and I can't read this one.
I think it's Lance Twitchell.
Lance Twitchell, could you folks come back at the next hearing? Because we will have another hearing on this.
Libby's
already, that was me for Department of Law. Oh. Okay, great. They're both Department of Law. Okay, fine. Representative Christ Tompkins.
Thank you. And the point I think we've heard a lot is that Alaska already has symbolic official language, and that's English. And it was passed in that 1998 voter initiative. And that initiative passed a symbolic official language to the exclusion of these 20 Alaska Native languages and to people who are dedicating their lives to learning these languages, having that recognition, that acknowledgement that these 20 Alaska Native languages are, in the official and ceremonial sense of the state of Alaska, of equal importance, and that just as much Alaska's languages is the intent of this bill. That's the significance of this bill.
Now we're back to the bill again. Let's do something with the amendment, and then we're going to adjourn. And
I remove my objection to the amendment.
Okay. Any other objection?
Actually, Gaddis objected.
Oh,
maybe he did too.
I'm sorry.
I apologize. I don't remember. I thought I did.
You don't remember the amendment? Okay. The amendment's, the objection is removed? Okay. Without further objection.
Well,
it was my amendment, and quite frankly.
It was your amendment.
It was my objection. I'm confused. I really have to go back to the amendment again. I am really not ready to remove my objection.
Okay. At that point, then, it is 10 o'clock. It's been a very good discussion, I think. We will hear this bill again and do our best to hear it as soon as we can because we need to take action on the amendment, up or down. We need to take action on the bill, up or down. That's only fair. A lot of people put a lot of time and emotion into this, and we need to take action on it. So with that, any other? My chief of staff there, committee, do you have?
Hasn't been completed.
What then? Okay. The agenda for the next meeting, I guess, will be Tuesday, has not been completed yet, but we'll do our best to get this on the agenda for this coming Tuesday if we possibly can. I'd like to thank everybody, and we are adjourned.